Oh, that's right. Good afternoon, everybody. How you doing? Hey, I am Ann Eller, and I have a guest that you are going to just say, I got to hear more about this guy. I am talking with Tim Lowry, and let me see. I've got three versions of his introductions here. He says the long one, please don't bore people with all the blah, blah, blah. The medium one, this isn't too bad, but the short introduction, this is the one he likes the best. Tim Lowry tells stories of the people, by the people, and for the people. He mixes stories of American history and folklore with tales of growing up Baptist, teaching English to Russian immigrants, exciting road trips to Disney World, baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet. And we had a great conversation the last time you were here. In fact, you were here at the Greenwood Library system, and you were doing some talks.
Yes, for Greenwood Reads.
That's right. And that was the end of October. And now you have come back up here because you're going to be at the Abbeville County Library tomorrow morning at 11.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to be at the McCormick County Public Library tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m.
Indeed, yes.
So what are you going to be talking about at these two library events?
I'm going to do, unless the spirit moves and I change my mind between the two libraries, I'll do the same program at each library. For summer reading, the theme is heroes. Every hero has a story.
Right.
And so when the library called me and said, what you got that would match that theme, I said, oh, I have lots of stories of American heroes, but one that would fit real well for summer reading would be stories of Lewis and Clark and their journey to the Pacific Northwest. So we landed on that theme. That's what we're going to do tomorrow. So that big category encompasses stories of woolly mammoths, stories of native tribes, legends and lore from the Lakota and the Blackfoot peoples, of course, animal adventures with grizzly bears and wildcats and mountain lions, and their famous guide, Sacagawea,
right,
who is one of the great women of American history.
It's so on the $1 coin, stuff. Yes.
That's right.
Yes, she is.
That reminds me, my daughter is about to lose her first tooth, and I told her the tooth fairy bring her a golden coin, so it'll be a Sacagawea dollar.
Well, that sounds great, Tim. And, you know, since you are from down there in Somerville, you know, I would just like to ask you, you know, we've seen tremendous positiveness coming out of the massacre down there in Charleston at the church. But you were telling me a little bit about the human chain that came across the bridge. What can you tell us about that?
Oh, sure. I first got wind of that on Facebook, where generally if the world is on fire, that's how I find out about it.
It's exactly.
It's on Facebook. And just some local folks, I don't think they were anybody official, decided, you know what would be a really great thing to do would be for people to join hands and stay on the pedestrian walkway and go all the way across the big Cooper River Bridge from one side to the other to show our support for Mother Emanuel Church and unity of everyone in the Charleston area and across South Carolina. So they just started putting the word out on Facebook. And the very first announcement that I saw said, we're hoping for 3,000 people. We think we could span the bridge easily if we had 3,000 people show up. And estimates range between 10 and 20,000 people showed up. I'm confident in saying there were well over 10,000 people. My wife and I took our two little girls and went to participate and never saw the bridge. There were so many people. Couldn't even get close to the bridge. Never saw it.
Oh, wow.
But it was a very exciting event. And while we stood there waiting to move up onto the bridge, word started coming along the street that it was time for the 9 minutes of silence to recognize the nine victims of the tragedy. And thousands of people just fell silent and held silence for 9 minutes. And then there was applause, and everybody hugged and shook hands and introduced themselves, and then we went home. That was that.
Wow. That had to be a very powerful feeling, though.
It was. Very, very powerful. Yes.
And I know that it was meaningful, and I know it's been very meaningful to everybody that has not been there, but to see all the action and reaction that's been happening down there in Charleston. How would you say the mood in Charleston is right now?
Still a good degree of shock, just kind of, I know in my regular daily activities, if you have something that must be done, you get it done, and then as soon as you finish with that, you find yourself thinking about it again. And then you go on to the next thing that must be done. And when you have a moment, your mind kind of starts to drift back to what's going on downtown. So everything, I think everybody's still reeling a little bit. But
I'm sure.
But determined. I think that would be a good word, determination on everybody's mind.
I think it has been amazing to see how people have pulled together down there in Charleston. I think that has been the thing. It hasn't divided. It has brought people together. And that's
the thing. It truly has. It's been very thrilling. And I must say that it is no less thrilling for me, but not surprising, because I had my own little experience years ago when I first moved to Charleston with the black community, particularly in that section of town at a sister church that's just around the corner from Emmanuel AME. And so I've known that wonderful spirit of welcome, open arms, forgiveness, reconciliation. I've seen that firsthand, which is wonderful that the whole world gets to see what I've seen in Charleston.
Absolutely. So I know everybody's thoughts and prayers are with everyone down there, but I just thought since you were from down there, you could give us more of a bird's eye view since you were right there.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yep, yeah, right there.
Right there. So, as you've made this trip up here, how was your trip up here today? Uneventful?
Uneventful. I only made one mistake. I thought my gas gauge was getting toward empty, and I thought, oh, when I get off the interstate, there'll be a gas station. There is not a gas station on Jalapa Road, exit 66 from I-26. But way out in the country, I found a really nice small engine repair shop, and they sold me a gallon of gas to get me on into Greenwood.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so see, South Carolina people, we take care of each other.
We do. Now, you know, one of the things that is very interesting, Tim, to me, is how you got interested in telling stories and how you came to that, because you taught school.
I did. I taught school for 5 years. When I was in college, I was a theater major and earned a degree in speech education. So I was certified to teach speech and English and taught school for 5 years, but was really chomping at the bit to work for myself and do more performing and less classroom work. So long story short, my wife and I went to a drama conference and saw other people who are making a living doing what they love to do and decided, let's just go for it. So we quit our jobs and I became a storyteller.
And by George, it worked out for you.
It did. It worked out great. This is my 15th year as a full-time storyteller. My wife taught school for about 5 or 6 of those years, and then she left the classroom and came home to be a stay-at-home mom, and we've just been rolling along ever since.
And you have two adopted daughters.
Two adopted daughters, yep. One is 5 and one is 3, and their major accomplishment of the summer is they just finished swim lessons and they can now swim.
Swim.
Yes.
Okay.
We go to the pool every day.
Well, that's great. Well, we are sure glad that you are here. Glad that you are here today. We're going to be talking about some of the things you've been working on, some of the places you've been. Have you ever heard of We Piddle Around Theater? Well, you're going to hear about it when we come back. So don't you go away.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here this afternoon. I'm Ann Eller. I am with Tim Lowry. He is the storyteller. And I tell you what, you can find out more about Tim Lowry by just going to storytellertimlowry.com. Check out his some of the things about him there. But Tim, you've been what have you been doing since you've been here last the end of October? I think you were with us.
Well, as the saying goes, I've been round the world on a mule.
Okay, been a slow mule or a fast one, Tim?
Depends. Depends on whether I'm driving or flying, I
okay.
guess.
Okay. But you've traveled a fur piece.
A fur piece this past January. I was in Brundage, Alabama.
Okay.
And the easy directions, you go to the fourth corner of the earth and turn left, and you come to Brundage, Alabama.
Okay.
It's actually not so far removed from world-famous Tuskegee, Alabama, right, where Tuskegee University sits. And in Brundage, they have a theater called the Wee Piddle Around Theater.
I like it. I like it. What do they piddle around with there?
Well, it was built back during the era of the Great Depression and the WPA.
WPA. We piddle around.
My grandfather used to say that. I remember him saying, you know what WPA stood for? And so the town just embraced that and said, we're going to take this old building. It had been almost completely destroyed by a fire.
Right.
And so rather than tear it down, they took the four walls and left the four big brick walls, threw down a sawdust floor and put in rough picnic tables with bright red and gingham tablecloths and a tin roof. And they have bluegrass concerts and storytelling festivals and all kinds of things that celebrate Alabama culture.
How about that?
So every winter they have a Wee Piddle Around Storytelling Festival.
Wow. So a lot of people come from Tuskegee and around outside the area?
All over, yeah. And some people come from Farfield and spend the night and make a weekend of it. There were about 400, 450 people attending the festival.
Wow.
Yeah, which made for a big full house, lots of fun, good energy.
So I guess you told some stories?
I did. I told stories about growing up in Kentucky, where I spent my childhood, and then told a few stories from the low country of South Carolina as well.
That's great. So where else you been?
Well, let's see. That was my winter time travel, and then through the rest of the winter, I was at lots of schools all over South Carolina. And then I went out to Mariposa, California, which is a gold rush town.
Okay.
And that was lots of fun.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's the Mariposa Storytelling Festival. Mariposa has a delightful saying for their town. They say, we are below the snow, above the clouds, and delightfully behind the times.
Oh, I like it. I bet you like that, didn't you?
Yeah, it was perfect. They have a high school that sits up on the hill above the town of about 500 kids, and they're still just relaxed enough that they just dismiss every day at noon and have a 90-minute lunch period, and the kids come down the hill and eat in the local diners and drugstore and that kind
of
thing.
Well, that's a lot easier than providing lunches, isn't it?
Yeah, it was great. It was lots of fun. The principal told me that they had done away with that, and then all the local merchants said, hey, you know, those 500 kids eating lunch every day are a major part of our local economy. Let them come. So they went back to it.
How about that? Well, good for them. That's great. So, and then weren't you in Yosemite?
I was, yeah. Mariposa is a gateway community to Yosemite National Park. And the festival organizer said, and we want you to tell stories at Yosemite Elementary School. And I thought, oh, they just named it that because we're close to the park. It's a local school. And they said, oh, no, you're going to go 50 miles into the park, and you'll tell stories right at the foot of Yosemite Falls. So sure enough, right out the library window is the world-famous Yosemite Falls. And out the library window on the other side is the world-famous Half Dome. Fabulous, beautiful, beautiful location for an elementary school.
Wow. Now, and you said that was actually part of the park system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the National Park System provides, particularly at larger parks, they provide educational facilities for federal employees, children.
Mm-hmm.
So if you work at Yosemite National Park and you have school-aged children, that's where they go to school. They go to elementary school there, and then they go into the town of Mariposa for high school.
And I think you thought that if you'd known that there were these type of school systems out here, you might still be teaching.
If I had known, yeah. I'd do a few years at Yosemite and then apply for a transfer to Grand Canyon and go to the Grand Teton.
Yeah.
That'd be just fine.
Get to see all of these. Well, you know, that is terrific. And then you went to one other very interesting place, didn't you?
I did. I went to Dowagiac, Michigan.
Now, where is Dowagiac, Michigan?
Dowagiac, Michigan is a stone's throw from Kalamazoo.
Okay.
Yeah, which is a stone's throw from Holland, which is a stone's throw from Frankenmuth. Yeah.
Did you get to fly directly into there?
I flew to South Bend. You could fly to South Bend or you could fly to Kalamazoo.
Okay.
And Delta took me to South Bend.
Okay. And what are they famous for?
They are famous for the Dogwood Arts Festival that takes place there every spring. And the organizers of the festival hire an artist for each of the major art genres that they want to feature. So I was the storytelling feature. There was some beautiful artwork on loan from Oh, dear. I have to think of the... It's the Museum of Midwestern Art or something like that. But mm-hmm. on display was a Grandma Moses. I got
oh, my
to see
goodness.
A real Grandma
a
Moses,
real one?
Which was lots of fun. And a Norman Rockwell original, which
wow.
had been kind of lost. The Norman Rockwell Museum in Massachusetts had it listed in their catalog with location unknown. And this museum located it and said... Actually, we have it right here. So it was really fun to see those. And then the musician that was featured was Melissa Manchester.
Oh, my goodness.
Remember that?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Wow.
So it was a lot of fun.
That's some big name stuff.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah. So Tim, I guess as you look at traveling around and everything, do you ever pinch yourself and say, how did I end up doing what I really wanted to do and make money at it?
I do. I wake up every morning and say, now, God, I want to be willing to do whatever you want me to do, but I want you to know I really like what I'm doing now.
So I don't want to really change if I don't have to here.
A number of years ago, when I left the classroom and started telling stories, I volunteered at the library to teach English as a second language, and all of my students were Russian senior citizens.
Now, that should have been interesting.
Oh, they were so much fun. It was like having a dozen grandmas and grandpas who always took good care of you. And they asked me, how are you going to make money if you're not going to teach school? And I said, well, I'm going to tell stories. Well, what kind of stories? And so I started searching for something that would be familiar to them. And I said, I know. In Russia, there's a story in English translation. It's called Red Cap. And they said, ah, yes. And they had heavy accents from Russia. You know, I was their English teacher. And they said, ah, yes, little girl, big red hat, wolf. I said, yes, yes, stories like that. I'm going to tell stories like that. And people will pay you money. And I said, yes, in Russia, we tell these stories for free. I said, in America, never do anything you're good at for free. And they all burst out laughing and said, oh, we love this country.
You know, that is one of the things. I mean, how did they end up? Because I remember you told some of this story before. How did they end up in Charleston?
In Charleston.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why Charleston seemed to be a bit of a gateway for immigrants from Russia. But their children, when the Iron Curtain came down in 1989, as soon as they were able, their children came to America to begin a new life. And their number one goal was to earn and save enough money to then bring their older parents to the United States. And so we saw kind of two waves, a lot of young, very highly motivated people who would work at anything and probably work two or three jobs mm-hmm. in order to earn enough money to bring their parents from Russia and then help their parents retire in the United States.
And what did they think of the United States?
Oh, their most common comment was, it's like Disney World, everybody happy, everybody smiling. One of my good Russian friends, she would say, in Russia, she said, you say, how are you? People say, oh, my head, my back, the KGB. She said, but in America, everybody's happy.
And how did they do on learning English?
Some did better than others, just like any group of people learning
a new
language,
I suppose. But were they motivated to learn English?
Oh, yes. They loved to learn English. They were very concerned about grammar, uh-huh. and which was not easy for them because it's so different from – even the alphabet's different. You know,
right.
Russian uses Cyrillic alphabet and American doesn't. But they loved to learn. Many of them were very high achieving professionals in Russia before their retirement. I had a psychiatrist in my class and a couple Russian colonels from the
oh my goodness.
Red Army, yeah, who were part of the Russian Army and Air Force back, a World War II fighter pilot in my group. Yeah.
That should have been a really interesting experience.
Oh, yeah. They had lots of fascinating stories.
And did you keep up with them even after you finished the class?
For a good while, many of them moved away hither or yon as their children would settle into a career here in the United States. They would take their parents with them. So
oh, okay.
One of my students moved to Washington, D.C., and another moved out west somewhere.
Well, that's cool. Well, we are here with Tim Lowry this afternoon. We've got some really great stuff to talk about here this afternoon. I may even get him to tell us a little story here. That's always fun when you have a primo storyteller, Tim Lowry, in the building. We'll have to get him to tell you a story. But he is going to be, if you'd like to hear great stories, tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock at the Abbeville County Public Library at 11 a.m. and then tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m. at the McCormick County Public Library. Make sure you stay tuned. News is up, and we'll be back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Fast's Gallery. Yes, I'm Ann Eller. I am talking with storyteller Tim Lowry this afternoon. You know, he's a very busy guy, and he's going to be, as I've said, over there in Abbeville at the library tomorrow morning at 11, and then he will be at the McCormick Library 2 p.m. Tomorrow afternoon. So he decided he could come by and spend some time with us. And I know, Tim, you've been working on a new subscription website that's going to be titled Story Village USA, yes?
Yes. For a long time, for years, I've told stories from American history. And
why American history? Why do you find that so fascinating?
Part of it was by default. My dad, we grew up in Kentucky, my sister and I, and my dad is a native of South Florida.
Okay.
And he was very concerned.
Oh, that's a rare thing.
Yeah, very rare. And he was concerned that all we would know about Florida was Mickey Mouse. So every year when we would go down to visit the grandparents from Kentucky, that was a 998-mile trip from our door to their door. We saw every historic site between Kentucky and South Florida.
And you know them all well.
Every single one of them. So people say, oh, I bet you just loved history in school. I say, actually, I thought it was rather boring because it was always just read the book and answer the questions at the end of the chapter. But I loved visiting historic places. And
did your dad made history come alive for you then, do you think, at visiting the monuments
think so,
and everything?
Definitely. Yeah, we visited battlefields and historic cities and historic houses and the Okefenokee Swamp and all of that good stuff. And so then when I started working as a storyteller, that was all rolling around in my brain. And I lived in Charleston, South Carolina, which is where history lives. So
exactly.
It was just kind of a given
right.
that would become a specialty of mine.
So now, one of the things that is very interesting, you talk about Disney World, baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet. How do you roll all those together? That's a very old theme, isn't
it? Oh,
yeah.
I think one reason I chose that is it lets people know what era I'm from, you know? So,
or the era you'd like to be in.
So I can talk intelligently about a rotary telephone,
right?
A ditto machine.
Yeah.
The other day I was telling some school children about how teachers used to pass out these still wet ditto papers and you would sniff the purple ink on the ditto paper. I said, it's no wonder there was a drug problem in the 1980s because in the 70s, the entry drug was ditto ink.
Now, I'd never thought about that, Tim. Well, there you go. See, we were sniffing things at an early age, weren't we? Yeah. But the stories that you grow up with, they are important, aren't they?
Very much so, yes. The stories about the time there was a black snake in your grandmother's kitchen sink are just as important as the day that Abraham Lincoln was elected president. They all work together to make a unique fabric that is Americana. So I like to do a little bit of all of that. And Story Village USA is going to be that. There will be, I learned a new term when I decided to build a subscription website. There's such a thing as a webisode. So
a webisode, is that an
episode? It's like an episode for the web.
Okay.
And each webisode has a theme. So for instance, the theme for one of the webisodes is the American Revolution. And there will be a video that you can watch of me telling the story of Peter Parker's pants from Charleston, South Carolina, about a British admiral who flipped his coattails toward the very refined gentleman of South Carolina, and we aimed a cannon very carefully, and he lost his pants as a result.
You know, that really is a very interesting story, and I asked you because I happen to have watched that one, Peter Parker's Pants, and I asked you if that was a true story, because it seems rather phenomenal that a cannonball from the non-sophisticated colonist who could end up going through the legs of a
right between his knees. Yep. And if it had just a wee bit better aim, or the wind had blown just a little bit one way or the other, it probably would have killed him. It would have hit him right in the backside.
But is that a true story?
True story. Yeah. There's just the tiniest bit of storyteller's license. He was kind of showing off. He was upset that he had lost this battle and was going to be forced to pull his ships away from the Palmetto Log Fort that we get our state nickname for, the Palmetto State. And so he jumped up onto the rail of the ship and flipped his coattails. It was the colonial version of mooning somebody.
Yes, exactly.
And they fired a cannon in his direction, and the cannonball explosion ripped his pants off. It probably just shredded them a good bit, but he lost his balance, and he fell and hit the deck and slid the length of the deck, and that just shredded his uniform right off of him.
And then there's another very interesting point, isn't there? He was going commando.
I'm afraid he was.
Commando for the commander. Isn't that interesting?
In the South Carolina heat, he had ditched the Long John underwear.
And so I think, as the story goes, doesn't he have to pull all the splinters?
Yeah, he had to have the ship surgeon remove all the splinters from his legs and his backside, and he had to be bandaged from powder burns from the explosion. And it was such a big deal that someone inside Fort Moultrie, which was called Fort Sullivan at that time, said, we should sing what they called the Doodle Doodle song. They thought we should strike up a rousing chorus of Yankee Doodle in celebration. And someone else said, no, we're Charlestonians. That song's for Bostonians. And so they wrote their own little ditty that said, Mr. Peter Parker had his pants blown off in the battle just today. He made such a rumpus that we shot him in the bumpus, and now he's gone away.
It's really great. It's really great. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it was like 11 minutes long, so not even that long.
Yep, little story.
But you totally get pulled into the story. And I think, you know, that's what makes a storyteller so important. But, you know, one of the questions that I have, and, you know, I think I asked you this before, storytelling as an art in today's technological world, how does it all fit, Tim?
I think that there's been a good bit of growing interest for storytelling, because at some point with technology and the digital age, you just kind of go into overload. You fatigue.
Right.
And you want a real human connection. You want someone who coughs, and if you poke them, they bleed.
Yes.
And so there's been a kind of a resurgence in the face-to-face conversation, everyday stories, local history, family stories, and then using technology to preserve those. Probably the best example that's nationally known is StoryCorps, which travels all over the country with a mobile recording studio, and they just sit down with everyday folks and talk about everyday life, and then all of those stories are filed away and kept in perpetuity at places like the Smithsonian Institution and the National Archives.
See, I think that's great, because I think we're losing some of that with all the technology that people have. I mean, I'm a talker. I enjoy talking. But, you know, I think we see with young people, you know, we've talked about this before, two people sitting at a table texting each other back and forth.
Oh, it's awful.
It is awful. Yes.
I was in a restaurant once where a family of four, everybody was on an electronic device, and it just went all over me. And it was one of those days when I was feeling particularly brave, and I had gone up front to get a handful of crayons for my children. And so I got an extra handful of crayons, and from across the dining room, I just threw a handful of crayons into the middle of that family. And they just rolled every which way on the table. It was like a bomb went off, and they all looked up, and I said, how about you talk about what just happened and put those things down? And I just turned around and walked off, never even introduced myself or anything.
You didn't see what happened? Did they all just look at you and go, oh, my God, and go back to texting or whatever they were doing?
I don't know. I figured
You better just keep walking.
Leave it to work its magic after that.
Now, how do you treat your children? You know, you said, what, they're 3 and 5? Is that how old?
3 and 5.
Uh-huh. Yeah. How are you going to raise your girls in today's technological society?
Well, I was just saying to my wife the other day, I said, I think we're about ready for some detox at our house. One of my children is African American, so that requires a lot of hair time.
Right.
You know, we do lots of twists and braids and updos and downdos and all of that. And my wife is a wonderful talent for hairdressing, but it does require time. And she's only 3.
So that's
sometimes,
tough, yes.
Sometimes it is worth popping in a Disney video to get her to sit still while you do your hair. But, yeah, we try to keep that limited. Yeah, make sure there's plenty of good outside playtime and story time and puppet shows.
What do you do at dinner time?
Oh, we definitely talk at dinner time. Yeah. In fact, sometimes we just say, for the next 5 minutes, let's just eat. Because the kids like to talk.
They like to talk. Okay. So even though they're adopted, they've inherited some things from you, Tim.
It rubs off.
It does rub off. Hey, let's hear a quick word from our sponsors and we'll be right back.
They say every kiss begins with, but at Sharp Facets Gallery, every smooch begins with Sharp Facets Gallery. Which do you want? A little kiss or a big smooch? I'll bet a big smooch. So shop Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, for rock bottom prices. And smooch-able results.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. Boy, it's hot outside, but it's cool in here, and there's some great conversation going on. So you're going to actually launch this website you were talking about, Story Village USA, this fall.
This fall, yes. The plan is to have it ready to go when kids go back to school.
And how will this actually work?
It'll be, if you think about it like a magazine, only it's digital.
Right.
Delivered on the computer rather than coming in your mailbox. So you can learn about American Revolution. You can hear a folk tale from that era. So a story that maybe George Washington told his children, or a story that slave children heard in the field after a day's work.
Now, how accurate is this, though, Tim? You know, because we all, you know, if it's on the internet, you know, we all have questions, right?
Yeah, I knew that would be a question, so I have a whole section of each webisode called Teacher Stuff.
Okay.
Where I list all of my sources, primary sources, websites, books, national park websites, different places where you can go to verify this is the real stuff.
Right.
And you can also keep me honest. That way, if I take Storyteller's license, you can say,
Right, yeah. Wow, well, that's great. Now, how do you have to subscribe? Is it?
Initially, it'll be offered to schools.
Okay.
And I'm hoping that it'll be a good supplement to their social studies curriculum.
And, now, well, you know, social studies isn't one of those high on the list classes anymore, is it?
True. Yeah, it kind of gets kicked to the last hour of the day.
Right.
So I'm hoping that it'll be a good supplement to the book.
Right.
And then we'll branch out from there so that families can subscribe. And what I'm hoping is that it'll become popular enough that any South Carolina teacher can say, you need some extra credit? Tell you what. Go home with this password and watch this story and do the project that you see there, and I'll give you some some extra credit for your project on Clara Barton or, oh goodness, there's just all kinds of things on there.
Well, you know, I think that's a great idea, and I think, you know, that one of the things that we are lacking in our schools, particularly maybe in South Carolina, but is the social studies, are the stories and everything, and being able to bring it, make it relevant through storytelling is something that I think is really needed.
Sure, sure. Children ask me sometimes, they say, how do you learn these stories? Where do you find them? And I say, well, I start with your social studies book, and I read a story like the Battle of Fort Sullivan, and I think, you know, this was a major turning point for South Carolina in the American Revolution. It caused a lot of people who were sort of on the fence to say, yes, I'm going to declare myself a patriot and I'm going to throw my hat in as somebody who wants to fight for independence. So there's bound to be more to this story than just the 6 or 7 paragraphs in the social studies book. So then I go to the library and start digging. and you find things like Peter Parker's pants. Well, that's a great entry point for any third grader. Everybody's interested in underwear,
right,
or the lack thereof.
Right, exactly. And I found it interesting because you said the telling of that story is one of the things that made him go ahead and sign the Declaration of Independence.
Sure was, yeah.
I mean, and I never knew that.
A full report was taken by courier right up to Philadelphia and was read on the floor of the United States Congress. And they said, well, hey, look. South Carolina has been rather successful. They were terribly outgunned and outnumbered, and still they managed to pull that off. And so it helped a lot of founding fathers say, I think I'll sign. I think we can do this.
I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah,
and that's
a
little known fact. I mean, you know,
we
South
sure
Carolina.
Did.
Yeah.
We did. There were three or four very interesting stories like that. Another was that Benjamin Franklin took a delegation from Congress to see some men in the field, and a flock of ducks came up, and they all grabbed their guns and shot ducks for supper, and they said, my goodness, these men are excellent shots. Maybe we could win a revolution. So
took you by surprise, did it?
Thanks to the lowly duck, we were able to convince a few more men to declare independence.
You know, and look what this country has accomplished.
It's stunning. It's absolutely stunning.
And yet, if you read the stories of the start, you would have never thought that it would have gotten off the ground.
No, you would have never dreamed.
Yeah, I mean, let's see.
King George certainly didn't dream.
Yeah, well, there you go. He did. He didn't take much of it seriously, did he? In fact, I think when you were telling, they were looking at the palmetto logs that when the cannon fire came in, that because the logs were so fresh, it bounced, the things bounced off.
Bounced right back off.
The cannonballs bounced right off of it.
Was a blessing in disguise.
That's right. And then didn't they, because they didn't have that much ammunition, they got them in the cannons and shot them back at them?
Yeah,
is that true?
Yeah, the British had so much firepower that they really weren't, and this was true in a number of battles, they weren't real careful with their aim. They just figured, you know, if you shoot enough cannonballs, you'll hit something eventually. And so lots of cannon fire flew way off course, and our men would grab those cannonballs and save them, and then use the British cannonballs in their own cannon, fire right back at the enemy. Yeah.
You know, I think probably if history had been more alive for me, I would have had more interest in it. And I think that's part of a problem of history, is that it doesn't come alive like we're talking about it right now.
Yeah, I see boys and girls all over South Carolina who really get fired up and enjoy stories of not only South Carolina, but American history. And that's exciting to see.
Yeah, but that's if you don't get to see that, you don't have that appreciation or the excitement about, like, the fact that they took that report up there and that made a few more sign on to the Declaration of Independence. Who knew that was important?
Yeah, yeah, it was a big deal.
Yeah. So as you talk about things, I guess when you go to do a show, you never really know who's going to be there unless they tell you it's all elementary kids, correct?
Right, right. Particularly at a public library, keyword public.
Yes.
You know, this is a collection of books and resources of the people, by the people, and for the people. So people of all walks of life and ages show up. You might have 4-year-olds or 40-year-olds or 94-year-olds.
Combinations thereof.
Yeah.
So I guess you have to adapt the stories based on the crowd.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah. So our subject tomorrow in Abbeville and McCormick lends itself well to that. Adults enjoy hearing adventures of Lewis and Clark. And there's so many wonderful stories that, again, are just briefly mentioned in any history book, but if you delve further, are very exciting. The day that a grizzly bear surprised Meriwether Lewis is a pretty hair-raising story. I would not have wanted to be in his shoes. But then, of course, they visited with Indian tribes. Many times were first contact from the United States government with local tribes. And so they were privy to all kinds of folklore and folk remedies. In fact, one of the little-known stories is that Meriwether Lewis delivered Sacagawea's baby. And she went into distress, and he had very little medical training, but he knew enough to know this could go very badly. And then he was in a real panic as to what to do. And an old Indian man said, I can help that woman if we take the tail of a rattlesnake and grind it up and pour water over it and have her drink it, she'll be all right. And Meriwether Lewis wrote in his journal, he had no idea if that was a true medical remedy or not, but he had nothing else to try, so might as well do it. She drank the potion. 5 minutes later, the baby was born. Her pulse went back to normal. Her heart rate was fine. Her breathing was fine. And just days after that, that baby was on a baby board and she was leading those men across the wilderness. So you never know. It's just unbelievable.
You know, but you got to admire that leap of faith, right? You know,
oh, yeah.
I could kill her, or
a can-do attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and yet she survived when he had no other choice. But you know, in today's world, what would we do? What would we do? This is my question to you, Tim. If we were sitting here and we couldn't find the answer on Google, what would we do?
What would we do? I know. Yeah, yeah. Google then was the old man in the tribe who knew stuff. Yeah.
And you know, that I think we forget that sometimes, don't we? That all the information truly in this world has been passed down through generation and generation. Some of it has been proven to be true. Some has been proven not to be true, but if you want to check it out, you can check it out on Google. But where did it all start?
Yeah, from a human being. Yeah,
yeah.
That's true.
I loved Mad Max and the Thunderdome, you know, the movie, because they had the group. Did you ever see it?
Bits and pieces. I've seen scenes.
Okay,
yeah.
Where the young people, the young people there, and they told the stories to the children because you had to tell so that everybody would know the stories of the next generation. And that's, they didn't have anything other than the spoken word. And I always, whenever I talk to a storyteller, like, I always think about that, because they told the stories and the stories went from generation to generation.
That's true. That's true. I just came across a proverb the other day. It was just, the notation said African proverb. I want to find out which African said it, but
right.
It said, when an old person dies, it as is if a whole library has burned down.
Wow.
And I thought, that's very, very true.
That is very cool. Well, listen, with that note, we are going to end the show. I have been talking with Tim Lowry right here on WCRS in Greenwood. He is going to be at Abbeville tomorrow at 11 o'clock, and he's going to be at the McCormick County Public Library tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m. If you can be there, I highly recommend it. You will be highly entertained. Tim, thanks so much for coming today.
My great pleasure.
All right. That's going to do it for us. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.